Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. A new report has been issued by the Oregon Justice Resource Center. It's entitled, I Am the Law, The Rise of Oregon's Constitutional Sheriffs. It's eye-opening and it's alarming. To discuss this report and the so-called Constitutional Sheriffs Movement, I'm joined by Justin Lowe, Investigative Research Associate with the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Justin, welcome.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for having me today.
Let's start with the basics. Your report describes something called the Constitutional Sheriffs Movement. What is that?
That's a great question. That is the crux of this new report that we've released at the Oregon Justice Resource Center. The Constitutional Sheriffs Movement is a national movement that has been working under the false doctrine and belief that sheriffs hold the highest authority in their county, higher than any other state or federal elected official, higher than any judge or any other law enforcement entities within their jurisdiction. And consequently, for those that identify as constitutional sheriffs, they operate and under the assumption that they have the unilateral power to defy or disregard laws or policies passed by state or federal governments that they believe that are unconstitutional. They believe that they have so much power that some might even believe that they are a higher authority than the president of the country.
Just as an aside, I was looking through the National Archives earlier today. I've read the Constitution and all 27 amendments before, but I just wanted to check and make sure. And yeah, there's no mention of sheriffs anywhere in there.
Correct.
It's in fact, the office of sheriff is a lot older than this colony. Let's back up for a moment. The history of sheriffs and police in general, it's ugly as sin, and I think we need to go there first. Let's start with the office of sheriff. How did it develop?
Sure. The office of the sheriff is an entity that came over to the American colonies from feudal England times. And it was one where back in feudal England, there were these groups of serfs that, or like folks that were living on feudal land, be it farmers and whatnot. They would directly hire someone to protect their land and area. And that individual would also serve as an informal leader or liaison to the king and the king's court. And that individual was called a reeve. And the land that he was elected from or representing, that was called a shire. And so putting those two words together over time, it eventually formed the present day word that we're familiar with, which is sheriff. And these individuals had the power to sit in the king's court, to give reports on what was happening down in the shires. And when it came time to go back to the shires with the people that had elected the leader, they would also be tasked with tax collection and then protecting the land and area from bandits or any other form of what was deemed unlawful activity at the time.
And thus we get the Sheriff of Nottingham, which is...
Correct.
There's a Latin phrase. I'm familiar with it in the context of drug enforcement, but I'm sure that a lot of people have heard it. Talk for a moment, if you could, about posse comitatus.
Yes, so that term is still relevant to our conversation about the history of the sheriff back in medieval England. And it was a Latin concept that is called force of the country. That's what it translates to. And force of the county, my apologies. And what posse comitatus was, is that in the event that the sheriff needed to protect the land that they were elected to serve and the people within it, they had the ability in medieval England to round up all the able-bodied folks, so mostly young men, and pull together a civilian force to essentially follow the orders of the sheriff and to either defeat a threat, an external threat that is being posed to the land, or to help apprehend a threat. And what the main takeaway from this is that the sheriff has the ability to pull together a civilian patrol or even army, depending on how many folks that they bring in. And that concept was brought over to the American colonies and still exists to this day in some form in state statutes. In fact, there is still a provision in Oregon state statute where a sheriff can either bring in civilians and either volunteer, deputize them, or to empower them to join them in apprehending a threat or defending the area from a threat.
I mean, it's all pretty straightforward, but how do we get from there to somebody thinking that as an elected county official, they somehow outrank the president? Because that's...
That is a phenomenal question, Doug, and it takes quite a few mental gymnastics to be able to do that. So bear with me as I connect the dots between the two previous questions that you've asked me. So given the medieval history of the position of the sheriff, as well as the value and concept of posse comitatus, what a handful of far-right extremists back in the 60s and 70s here in the United States did was that they took that history and the value of posse comitatus and basically said that the sheriff is directly elected by the people, by in a very local sense, because it's county to county. And because of that, they are directly responsible and beholden to those people. And because they are a law enforcement official, they twisted that in their heads to believe that, well, if they enforce the laws and we elect them, maybe we can pressure sheriffs to choose which laws that they choose to enforce based on our will as the constituents and the people within the county. And to further elaborate on the value of posse comitatus, that value of rounding up civilian patrols to defend against an external threat or apprehend a threat was transformed into a concept where it could be used also against overreach from state or federal governments, because that could be considered a threat to a local community. And so posse comitatus really became a vessel for the concept of local resistance within counties. And with the sheriff being the individual who could enact this or spearhead this, all of this has combined into a very twisted version of history and turning into what is now the Constitutional Sheriff Movement, where there are organizations like the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officer Association and Protect America Now that uplift and support the ideas of this history and the ideals behind posse comitatus to where state and federal government are seen as threats. The county level government is the closest thing that the people have in terms of control over their area and their security and their way of life, and that they view their county sheriff as the leader in those values and in that resistance against large government.
Resistance to things like taxes or paying rent to graze your animals on public land and things like that, for instance.
Sure, or policies that may be passed at a state or federal level, but maybe they don't agree with it at their local county level, and so they don't want to abide by it, and therefore they may encourage or pressure their sheriff to not enforce that in their area.
Are there any currently serving sheriffs in Oregon who are espousing these ideas, or for that matter, candidates, people running for sheriff, or district attorneys for that matter? I mean, they'd be actually, they're even state legislators. You know, let me rephrase this question. How concerned do we need to be? Are there people affiliated with or promoting the ideals of this movement who are now in office or running for office that are here in our state?
So the aforementioned groups that are built around the Constitutional Sheriff Movement, so the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officer Association and Protect America Now, they've gotten smarter since the pandemic and no longer have any public roles or rosters of these individuals. However, what I can say to your question of how concerned should Oregonians be about the Constitutional Sheriff Movement in our state, I would say that we should be vigilant and concerned. I think a great example of why we should have vigilance is as recent as this past election cycle in 2022, where ballot measure 114, which was passed by a majority here in Oregon to implement gun violence prevention policies and laws, it was a ballot measure that was opposed during and after its passage in November of 2022. And there were, if I can get my numbers correctly here, there were 26 current or former sheriffs that came out in opposition of the ballot measure and or made statements after its passage saying that they would not enforce parts or all of the bill or of the ballot measure once it was implemented, or would have no part in implementing it. And then it was later found that many of these same sheriffs then were part of the lawsuit that ensued to block the implementation of ballot measure 114.
That's the one part where it's like, I mean, okay, campaigning against a thing, I mean, it's questionable when people, but you know, ballot measures aren't considered partisan, so you know, any kind of elected official, any kind of official, even feds can get into the ballot measure contest, but it's sure. passed. I mean, that's you know, and okay, filing a lawsuit, well, that's an approach if you disagree, but you can't just say, well, I'm not going to do my job. Excuse me, you're a sheriff, you were elected for a had to vent for a moment. That's
understandable.
So, I'm sorry, continue. I apologize for interrupting. That was just...
No, not a problem at all. I think you summed up... Your frustration summed up my takeaways and our team's takeaways just because you're right. It's one thing to come out in opposition of a ballot measure or proposed legislation, but it's a completely different thing once something is passed and is in the process of either being implemented or is already implemented for an individual that is a sheriff to say, well, I don't personally agree with that. And I have an inbox that is being flooded with emails from constituents who may not be the majority of folks or they might not hold the majority opinion of folks in the county, but just happen to be loud, vocal, and boisterous to then convince the sheriff to say, I'm seeing all of this. I personally don't agree with it. So I'm not going to enforce it for the entire county. That in and of itself is ridiculous and is concerning on multiple levels. I think the most obvious being that ballot measures are the closest thing to direct democracy for us here in the state of Oregon and for other states that utilize a similar system of creating policies through a statewide voting system. And to outright deny the result of that and then threaten to not comply with it is in a direct attack or a, you know, direct defiance of that form of democracy right there.
This is my conversation with Justin Lowe, Investigative Research Associate with the Oregon Justice Resource Center. We're discussing a new report from the OJRC entitled I Am the Law, The Rise of Oregon's Constitutional Sheriffs. We'll have more in a moment. I'm Doug McVeigh. You're listening to Prison Pipeline.
One of the primary concerns that our organization has right now and will be keeping tabs on in the upcoming years is the reality that we have the highest court in our federal government on a war path to roll back, question, and make opinions that slash longstanding civil rights, liberties, and protections in our country. And with that happening at the highest court in our federal government, and then seeing the constitutional sheriff movement making inroads in regards to spreading its values and its ideals to an increasing amount of sheriffs, not only in our state, but across the country, one of our biggest concerns is that these sheriffs, again, with a loud and boisterous minority supporting them and serving as their echo chamber in their respective counties, may feel emboldened to either roll back things unilaterally in their own county or ignore laws and other measures that are being passed at the state level or laws that are being passed at the federal level. One of the things that we are most concerned about are abortion rights. And after, in a landscape, in a post-Dobbs landscape, where Roe v. Wade has been struck down, but in a state like Oregon, where lawmakers have shored up abortion access and protections and have created extensive amounts of protections for providers as well, there's concern that county sheriffs will just choose to ignore the policies and the laws that are in place or are in the process of being passed, all because they see that the Supreme Court has rolled back Roe v. Wade, and then they might personally disagree with abortion access. And so, again, they might take it upon themselves to apply their personal values into the way that they act as law enforcement and as jailers in their county, because sheriffs are also in charge of their county jails. And so they're in a very unique and concerning position where they are a law enforcement entity, a carceral entity, a politician, an agency leader, and then may have these values where they are convinced that they can act with plenary power and without any contest within their county.
Now, I know that there are going to be people who will say, well, okay, all that is a possibility, but, you know, reasonable people, I love that reasonable people thing, but reasonable people wouldn't ever really go too far. And yet, I mean, you have stories like, of course, Sheriff Joe Arpaio down in Arizona, who was the stereotype of an awful sheriff. And so, but, you know, again, it's Oregon. Couldn't happen here. Tell me, if you could, about Sheriff Glenn Palmer from Grant County, Oregon?
I'm so glad that you asked about him, because that is a great example to point to that it can happen in our state and has happened. So former Sheriff Glenn Palmer was an Oregon sheriff down in Grant County. And he was known for essentially going to war against federal authorities within his county, particularly against federal forestry workers on public lands. And he was known for using his deputies to follow, surveil, and harass these workers. He also deputized, through posse comitatus, upwards to 69 civilians to act as his personal watchdog patrol within Grant County. And then the final nail in the coffin for him, which eventually led to his ousting, was his support for armed right-wing militants that were behind the Sovereign Citizens Movement and also behind the Bundy family's takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge back in 2016. And so he is a prime example of someone who felt that he could act without impunity within his county, create a club of close and loyal civilians that he could deputize or empower through posse comitatus to act as surveillers against people that he thought opposed him, or to watch over the federal forestry workers. And fortunately, and I think this goes back to my point about how while these folks can be in power and espouse these horrible ideals, it is important to remember that the actions that they take and the values that they hold may not be representative of the overarching county and community. And what happened after the Bundy family's takeover of Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, and after it was found out that he supported the Bundy family and was even in communication with them while in office, the citizens of Grant County, along with other community-based organizations, rallied together and eventually found a candidate to get behind, and also started a really strong grassroots effort to inform other community members within Grant County about the horrible things that former Sheriff Palmer was doing, and so much so to where he then lost his election and is no longer a sheriff here in the state of Oregon.
Well, now, so that's what they did there. What can people do?
There are a handful of recommendations that we offer within the report. And the first, I think, is directed towards the people and to constituents and community members. And that's simply to vote and stay vigilant. You know, Sheriff Palmer was able to stay in office due to his incumbency, but also due to folks maybe not being aware of what he was up to or having apathy to what he was doing up until the Bundy incident. And so if folks can educate themselves through this report, and then also by being attentive to their local news and what their county sheriffs are doing, I think that's incredibly important for them to be informed and capable voters when elections come around. And I think that this also speaks to the fact that down ballot races are incredibly important, and people can't just look at the president, the senators, or state, even just state legislators. They have to look at everything. And I think this is actually a great opportunity to plug for folks that will catch us in time that we have a special district selection coming up here on May 16th. And while it's not going to have statewide officials or sheriffs on it, it will have important local nonpartisan offices that do have an impact in your everyday life or in your children's lives or in your friends and workers' lives at the very local level, much like how sheriffs have an impact at the county level. And so be sure to drop off your ballots before May 16th and to educate yourself and to care about all the races that are on the ballot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what should, policymakers, what should our politicians be doing?
So policymakers, I think, could take a look at something that California did recently in 2020, which was they passed a bill called AB 1185. And what that bill did was it allowed counties to establish what are effectively independent civilian oversight boards over sheriff offices. And these civilian oversight boards, when they've been established, they have the ability to subpoena sheriff offices for investigating misconduct. And I think that by passing something similar to AB 1185 here in Oregon, that could create a pathway for community members to be empowered and engage the county level and give them the tools and resources to serve as a check and balance over sheriffs in their county and their deputies. And I think that that could be a wonderful solution. Not a wonderful solution. It would be a tool for community members to be able to hold sheriffs accountable and also to emphasize the fact that there actually are people watching, and that hopefully that could dissuade sheriffs from acting out in extreme measures or in ways that are rooted in the constitutional sheriff movement's values.
That was my conversation with Justin Lowe, investigative research associate with the Oregon Justice Resource Center. We were discussing a new report from the OJRC entitled I Am the Law, The Rise of Oregon's Constitutional Sheriffs. Find that report and more at the Oregon Justice Resource Center's website. That's ojrc.info. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Many thanks to my guest, Justin Lowe, and the Oregon Justice Resource Center. And thanks especially to you, dear listener. You make it all worth it, and you make all this possible. Prison Pipeline is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.